revolution.
A very, very hearty welcome to all our listeners around the globe on this global streaming event, this global stream across this pale blue dot, the planet Earth. You are listening to Professor David Block, and together we are going to be looking up on this incredibly unique interview with one of South Africa's and one of the world's true icons, one of the world's true legends, a man whom time, with whom time simply floats away into the mists of the cosmic horizons. I am speaking of my very dear friend and honored guest at Cliff Central this afternoon, Advocate George Bezos. Now, of course, you would all remember that Advocate Bezos was part of the team who defended Nelson Mandela at the one of the most famous trials of all time, the Rivonia trial. I'm holding in my hands a book which George Bezos very kindly signed for me at his birthday, entitled Odyssey to Freedom. And if you haven't got it, please do Google it and buy it through Amazon, Odyssey to Freedom by George Bezos. But this is what some of the writers have to say. This book is in the league of Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom, writes Maureen Isaacson. Another one, Gerald Shaw at the Cape Times, writes, one of the most engaging South African autobiographies I have read. The Human Rights Law Resource Center in Melbourne writes, an extraordinary and compelling account of an extraordinary life. George, it is such a joy and honor and privilege to invite you to the Cliff Central studios here this afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you for asking me. A little effusive, but I'll accept it.
Well, this is from my heart. I know you touch me many times when I visit you at your home because you speak from your heart, and I just wanted to speak from my heart.
Thank you.
Now, just to the listeners, before we start the ball rolling with questions, if you want to reach me in studio, please do so. The number is 0861-555-189. That is 0861-555-189. If you wish to tweet me, it's at cliffcentral.com. If you want to WeChat, the WeChat ID is Cliff Central. And my Twitter is at Starry Galaxy Man. That's at Starry Galaxy Man. Please feel free to ask, make use of this unique opportunity to ask Advocate Bezos whatever is on your heart and mind. George, let me just start the ball rolling, if I may, with the following little story. I was in Australia as a guest of the Australian National University. And, of course, coming up in the news, and especially when I got back, was the whole issue of what was happening in Cape Town, in fact, at the University of Cape Town, and specifically focused on Rhodes and the removal of his statue. I wonder if you could just lead us briefly into your thoughts on this extremely difficult matter, because a difficult matter it is, but, you know, we couldn't be asking anyone more appropriately suited to address this issue than perhaps one of Nelson Mandela's greatest friends, a man who is executor, or one of the executors of his will, Advocate Bezos. Please just lead us down the how you feel this should, how this occurred and how it should be addressed.
The question is not an easy one, because we have a constitution,
yes,
which guarantees, among other things, the rights of minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have Rhodes, who wanted from Cape to Cairo a British...
A colonial.
Colonial. The whole of Africa. I think that our young people, particularly Africans, feel rather strongly in relation to what Rhodes stood for. And, of course, the Constitution gives them the right to express their views in relation to matters of some importance to them or the country. But the Constitution expects them to do it in a civilized manner, not compel other people to follow them, not to make any threats, because there are others that may have different views, and they are not to use unlawful methods. I think that there is a distinction between the University of Cape Town, which is private property, in the people who are the students. They consider it their university, their home. They may have a feeling that they don't want to wake up and look at a person who was not interested in the freedom or fair play in relation to their ancestors. And they can call upon the university authorities, because it's private property, to make a decision and transfer it to a museum. The Constitution actually protects minorities in relation to public property. And there is a distinction between what happened at the University of Cape Town and what is happening at the statue of President Kruger in Pretoria. That's a public place. The Constitution guarantees persons of a particular group to celebrate their culture and protect that right. Theoretically, of course, there may be exceptions for public property, but I think that a substantial body of people regard President Kruger, a person who was against the imperialism espoused by
Britain, by
the very rich man, and
that's well put.
Yes, and they, I think. That there are sufficient people in number who, including, by the way, Bram Fischer, whom I defended and who pointed out to me what was written on the statue.
Please tell us that story, George. The two of
Bram Fischer
together.
And I, yes, so Bram Fischer and I were, he was the senior counsel, I was one of the junior counsel, defending Nelson Mandela, Walter Sisulu, and others. And we parked in a garage near the courtroom, And we would approach the court from the back entrance.
Yes.
And on this particular day, Brahms said, "Let's go through the front. I want to show you something."
He said so.
He said so. Mm-hmm. And we went to the statue of President Kruger, three times life size, and what are called his boors, his people, carrying guns, sitting around it. And there was an inscription in Dutch, which, knowing some Afrikaans, I would try and make some. But Brahm translated it to me in English.
Yes.
"We may win or we may lose.
Yes.
But as sure as the sun rises above the clouds every day, we will see freedom."
We will see freedom.
"In Africa."
Wonderful. Yes.
Now, you know, this shows that his descendants regarded him as an enemy of colonialism.
Correct. Yes.
And in the belief of freedom. Mm-hmm. Of course, we may reasonably infer that President Kruger was not concerned about the freedom of the majority of the people of South Africa today or then. But nevertheless, that he associated freedom with the war that he had to fight against British imperialism. Tell us a story that his descendants, I believe, have a right to be protected in terms of the provisions of our Constitution.
I see.
That they are entitled to enjoy what is called their culture. And I think that the attack on the statue of
Rhodes.
Of Rhodes. The attack on the statue of Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes,
the attack,
I saw, yes, yes.
And the attack on the British on the British king of the past. I think that there are provisions, and I don't want to give a legal lecture, that actually there are two sections of the Constitution which protect the culture of even minorities of people. And I think that any sort of vandalism is completely unacceptable. It is a crime. And I think that politically, the Constitution calls for the unity of South Africa people with different backgrounds and different cultures. And what our president, in terms of the Constitution, is charged with is that he should actually do all he can in order to bring unity among us. And the behavior of some of the people is contrary to the provisions of the Constitution.
That's quite an exceptional view, George. I really, it's something which really resonates with one deeply so. How do you believe, I mean, suppose you were the vice chancellor at the UCT, would you have, how would you have addressed this issue? I mean, there is a lot of pain involved, as you've pointed out, but the Constitution does protect everybody, which is just awesome. The Rainbow Nation, the man whom you defended, Nelson Mandela himself. Is there any, I mean, does removing a statue solve anything?
Not really. in our particular situation, it actually does a fair amount of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we are striving and we have succeeded under the leadership of Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. Walter Sisulu, Bram Fischer, and many others, to seek unity and to seek equality.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that, well, the color of my skin made me semi-slave, and I don't want to see. I would appeal to people to be tolerant. I don't know that there are very many that admire the plutocrat, but
it doesn't serve anything
to remove it.
No. I mean, the point is, you know, France, for example, might say we want all the allies out and so on, but there are people buried in the ground. I mean, you can't remove everybody. So the point really is how far do you go? Now, you know, you can take one statue out, but now we're seeing the defacing of many different statues. Do you have any inkling? I mean, you knew the late legend and icon, Mr. Mandela, just so well, and you were his great confidant. Is that... how do you believe he would have handled this?
He would not have approved.
He would not have approved.
He made it quite clear
mm-hmm.
that we do not need a bloody revolution. Okay. We don't need any division amongst our people.
Okay.
We have a duty to unite our people.
Mm-hmm.
It was his... his idea that we should have a national anthem with four languages.
Mm-hmm.
It may well be that there may be some people in South Africa now that they say, oh, we don't need the English verse, we don't need the Afrikaans verse, we don't need the Corsa verse, and we don't need
the other
languages.
Mm.
So, is it now that we start a campaign that Unkosi Sikelela Afrika I am happy with? And Morena Buluka, I'm happy with. But I am unhappy. Eti Blofar Non Saliva, that's an Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is the language of the
oppressor.
Yes. What is it doing in it?
Yes.
Nelson Mandela achieved what he intended to achieve from the cell on Robben Island.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a united South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that we could not do what the Allies did in Germany, have Nuremberg trials,
mm-hmm.
that we had a process of actually giving amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the forefront of it. He persuaded the vast majority of the people.
Mm-hmm.
We have a constitution that was voted for by a majority of almost 400 as against 2 against and 20 abstentions for their own purposes. If this is what Nelson Mandela wanted. Nelson Mandela took the oath to become president, and on the platform there were generals from the South African apartheid army, generals from this apartheid police force, planes flying over union buildings
mm-hmm.
and dipping their wings to salute the new president.
Yes, I remember those awesome days.
And these were deliberate things done by the great leader of South Africa, an mm-hmm. example not only to Africa but to the world at large, mm-hmm. that we must have a unity of purpose. Mm-hmm. We must actually do what we can in order to be respectful of one another's. Mm-hmm. And we are entitled to keep our religion, mm-hmm. to keep our culture.
Our values, our history.
And our values and our history. Mm-hmm. We must, of course, not demean others, mm. but to be tolerant. Mm. This is what Nelson Mandela would have wanted.
So, do you really? So, therefore, you say he would not have approved. He would have allowed, and he did allow, the statue to remain where it was.
Yes,
because that's not the root issue, is it? That's
no,
what you're
because
saying.
Even you see, he saw the good rather than the fault on mankind or
individuals. Yeah, I think that's beautiful, George. He saw because, the good rather than the faults. Yes.
Because, you see, here was the man mm-hmm. who was an imperialist, who wanted not only South Africa, but he named Rhodesia after himself. an arrogant.
That's true. That's true.
And you know, he is no longer with us. And I don't know whether there are any great number of people that will regret if his statue is taken away from the premises
of the University of
Cape Town. University of Cape Town and put into a museum. Mm. But, you know, the statue of Kruger is massive. Mm. It's three or four times
life size. Yes.
More than life size.
Yes.
And
that's the one in Pretoria, of course.
In Pretoria. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have kept the name Pretoria. Mm. Does that remind us?
That's right.
Must we change the names of all the countries? Yes. Coming back from Pretoria to Johannesburg, you go to John Foster Drive, by the way, on your left.
And, yes, we went that way, or close to it, yes.
Yes. You see, there are things that there are comparisons being made, mm-hmm. that the Iraqis pulled Saddam Hussein's statue down.
Yes.
But that was a violent revolution.
I see.
There was no concord such as we had in South Africa.
I see.
That we have been cruel to one another.
Yes.
We have been masters and servants. Let's try and put that behind us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is what Mandela achieved. Mm-hmm. That although there was violence from 1990 to at the end of 93 or even 94, mm-hmm. there was nevertheless a deliberate attempt. Mm. Let the ills of the past be forgotten. And this is why, if we did not offer the generals and the people who committed crimes amnesty, there would never have been a...
there would have been a bloody revolution.
There would have been a bloody revolution.
Yes, exactly.
And, of course, you know, bloody revolutions very often do not serve the people well.
Right.
The bloody
right.
revolution in France.
Right.
Led,
that's a good example.
In France led to the Reign of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
The bloody revolution in Russia led to Stalinism.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give a lot of examples of that to the effect that the fanatics don't solve problems. They create problems.
Well, that's extremely interesting. You are listening to Professor David Block, and I have the singular joy and honor today of interviewing a truly, well, one of South Africa's and one of the world's greatest icons, I believe, Advocate George Bezos, who was part of the defense team, of course, of Nelson Mandela. The lines are absolutely buzzing. I see Neville Roberts has been on the line for some 13 minutes. Good afternoon to you, Neville. How are you?
I'm great, David. Nice to hear your voice.
It's lovely to hear your voice, too. Please set your questions for Advocate Bezos.
I don't so much have questions as opinion, if that's okay.
Okay.
First of all, I'd say we are on load shedding down here, so I missed the first part of your talk. I've only been listening in on the phone. It's been great. I think we should erect a statue to Ian McRae, the last man who could keep the lights on in Eskom. But I really agree with everything that George Bezos has said. I think he gave a very balanced perspective. And my big concern of the whole thing is this trampling of the legacy of Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
I mean, who can forget the joy when we all went to vote in that first time in the democracy?
Yes.
And all the races mixing together, and everyone was so excited about the new South Africa we're moving into.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty well all but gone, I would say now. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a deliberate policy, because everyone lives under the shadow of Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose they're trying to keep him out of the way in some shape or form now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I can't disagree with anything that George Bezos said, as I say.
No.
Why are they removing the statue of Rhodes in the Cape? Because it's a matter of historic record that the people who are protesting there in the Cape, they have no ancestral claim to that area. I have no problem with the legacy of apartheid and the moving statues that remind them of those times, whether it's Pavuta or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But Rhodes long preceded that. And if you talk the colonial legacy,
mm-hmm.
it's the finest infrastructure in Africa, mm-hmm. in this country, that was inherited by the present government.
Neville, thank you so much for those thoughts. I'm going to allow Advocate Bezos to respond now. Please listen in carefully. George, our listener Neville Roberts made a comment that, you know, in the days of Nelson Mandela, and I remember too, as you say, the airplanes flying and dropping their wings and saluting, you know, our legend Nelson Mandela. He's saying it's almost but disappeared now. That sort of struck a very sore note within my neurophysiological processes. What are your thoughts on that, George? What are your comments on Neville's, thoughts?
I would be a little bit more optimistic than Neville.
Yes, tell us how and why.
I believe that some young people, and I don't blame them, I was a bit of a revolutionary myself as a student at Wits, mm-hmm. and got into trouble. But I don't condemn the young people who are saying, you know, we don't want roads on our place. The university is part of our life. We don't want to have a look at them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether there is a contrary view in relation to the particular person.
Mm-hmm.
But what the Constitution provides for is... Mm-hmm. Yes, you have a right to do this,
mm-hmm.
but you must also have regard to the rights of others.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key point that you've made today. In other words, everybody deserves their little place in the sunshine.
Yes.
And as the rainbow, you know, as we see the awesomeness of the rainbows, George, it reminds us of the unity which the late Nelson Mandela tried to bring into our lives and into our nation in a most remarkable way. And as one of his closest confidants, I'm sure that, I mean, that's what you're echoing all the time, as I understand you, is that I equally have a right to stand at UCT as anybody else. I've got no specific comment on the road statue issue as far other than what you have said, is that there's a very, very beautiful constitution laid down, and you were so part of that, and that cannot just be swept under the rugs.
No, I think that I have just recently, a week ago, delivered a lecture at the University of Natal, where the heading was, respect the Constitution, don't blame it, because people say that the Constitution doesn't meet with the wants of certain groups of people. And I don't want to repeat what I said.
No, of course. No, I agree with you. We have a, I must first of all thank our listeners too. I believe we last week's broadcast was Podcast of the Week. Duncan, is that correct?
Well done on that, Professor. Podcast of the Week.
Wow, I'm just so thrilled that we're all looking up together, and that's what we're trying to do today, is build our nation rather than break it down. We're here to build. We're here to look up. We're here to strive. This is Professor David Block on Looking Up. You may reach us in studio on 0861-555-189 or Cliff Central com, Twitter, WeChat ID Cliff Central. George, there's a couple of incredible comments here. Inappropriate, this is his nickname, writes, exceptional guest you have in today, Prof. Can I just get his 2 cents on what he thinks of Mugabe and his comments about not wanting to see any whites in Soweto? George.
Well, you know that I defended Changarai and two of his colleagues in Zimbabwe.
When was that, George?
It was about 7 or 8 years ago.
I see, yes. And so what are your comments about this? You know, Mugabe saying apparently so, he's not wanting to see any whites or any whites in Soweto.
Well, I would ignore him.
I see.
Because I think that he has messed up his country. He is pretending to be a Democrat. He has become. He behaves like a dictator. I spent 10 months in Zimbabwe defending Changarai, where a made-up case was put up, which we destroyed, and the judge had no option but actually acquit the 3 leaders of the opposition that I defended. And I think that perhaps one of us should send Mr. Mugabe a copy of our constitution, and we would rather look at our constitution than take his advice to actually expel the people of South Africa. I'm a refugee.
Yes,
from the Second World War. I'm an eightlander.
Why should you go? Exactly.
I'm an eightlander.
Exactly. Why should you go?
Why must I do here?
Exactly.
I have a family. I have 3 sons.
Exactly.
I have grandchildren.
Exactly.
And
Mandela himself. I mean, you were his. I remember you told me many times, George, how you would drive Mandela around in those very, very early days. Just the two of you in the darkest of night. You know, here he goes and chooses as a white man as the executor of his will. I mean, come on, you know. You know, there's a place for everyone in South Africa, surely.
Well, I am very proud.
So am I.
To be a South African.
Yes.
I was born in Greece.
Absolutely.
We have a very rich culture, a very rich ancient language. The greatest of philosophers. And sometimes the Greeks don't do as well as I expect them to do, but that applies to South Africans as well. But I embraced South Africa, and I would like to think that the vast majority of the people of South Africa have embraced me, and I want to thank them for it. Yes.
Well, you know, George, I mean, here I sit and I have Duncan on my right-hand side, and we're just so close, aren't we, Duncan, and just great friends together in this wonderful Rainbow Nation.
That is absolutely correct, Professor.
I mean, I think that, you know, you've got such awesome talents and you're just leading the desk and controlling it in such a highly professional manner. And, you know, I'm white. I don't look at any race or color. Do you, Duncan?
Professor, honestly, I still don't see why there's still this confusion and conflict between races. I mean, we're all people.
Yes.
You know, there's no such thing as a black or white problem. They're all human problems, Professor.
Yes. Now, I'd like to just switch tack totally, if I may, George, for a moment, because we've just got so much to discuss in such a limited time. But I have the writing of Nelson Mandela before me, and this goes back to the Rivonia trial. And there are some words which you specifically suggested that he change in his closing defense arguments, his closing arguments. And I want to read it because I had the privilege of meeting Mr. Mandela on a number of occasions, and he wrote a couple of things for me and penned some ideas. But the famous one is this: it is an ideal for which I have lived. It is an ideal for which I still hope to live and to see realized. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die, quote unquote. Now, George, you, of course, played an integral part in having those words put in, but if it needs be, please, please lead our listeners, our precious jewels, our listeners, down the road of how you were able to convince Mr. Mandela to put this in and why you believed these were the crucial words to win the argument of the day.
Well, Mr. Mandela wrote out his speech.
Yes.
In longhand. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we as his lawyers saw the drafts from time to time. And when I saw that he wrote that he was prepared to die, I coming from Greece and having studied the life and death of Socrates, who was sentenced to death. Mm-hmm. He had an option after he was found guilty, mm-hmm. and the prosecutor asked for the death sentence. Mm-hmm. What alternative does he give?
Yes.
And Socrates, I think, needed a good lawyer.
Yes.
Because he said, I have done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. I merely tried to teach you what to do, how to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And you ignored me. Mm-hmm. And you are trying me. And I have been found guilty. Mm-hmm. I have served you well. You actually feed Olympic winners at the city hall. This is what you must do with me. Mm-hmm. You must take me to the city hall and feed me for the good that I have done.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this created a lot of antagonism, didn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
He was convicted by a majority.
Yes.
But that majority increased substantially when they voted what punishment should be imposed.
Yes.
They ignored his, cheeky response.
I suppose that's right. It was very cheeky, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
And I tried to persuade Nelson, you know, if you say that you're prepared to die, maybe that you'll be accused of seeking martyrdom.
Mm-hmm. In other words, I am prepared to die, full stop. The judge then hands down the death sentence. Yes.
Yeah. And the judge may say in his thoughts, well, you asked for it, here it is. Mm. And now Nelson said, I have said this so often from the platform that I don't want to leave it out now.
Mm.
But I persuaded him that we should have a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
this is what I believe in, this is what I want. And if needs be, mm-hmm. I am prepared mm-hmm. to die.
I think
he
it's,
accepted that.
Yes, yes. You know, he was always so willing to write things for me, George, and his mind always was beyond. I remember handing him, just presenting him with a piece of Moonrock. I am not a distributor of Moonrocks, as has been claimed in a recent book. That is absolute trash. But NASA wanted him to hold a piece of the moon in his hands. And I remember he just sat down, George. I gave him a pen and he said, one of the striking features of modern times is the emergence of men and women who have chosen to make the entire world the theater of their operations. We are the beneficiaries of this inspiring phenomenon. He wrote that about us astronomers. I think it is incredible that this man, his mind knew no limits, and yet he was so humble enough to take your advice, and here I have it, and you've signed it as well. You know, if needs be, it is an ideal for which I'm prepared to die. But there's humility here. There is no cheek. And that's clearly what was so graceful of you. And what I appreciate so much of you, George, is just your heart and your compassion. Now, we have another listener on the line, Deirdre. Deirdre, please come in.
Good afternoon, it's Deirdre de Meyer speaking.
Well, welcome, Deirdre. Of course, you come from the land of Krugersdorp. I remember growing up there, and I think near to your home, probably, or near to your place of work, it would surely be a statue of Paul Kruger. Most welcome to this incredible interview we're having with Advocate Bezos. Welcome.
Yes.
Your question, please.
I would like to know, how does Bram Fischer feel about the statue of Paul Kruger?
Okay, so the question is, how does Bram Fischer, in his heart, what would he have done? I mean, you know, you drove with him in the car, George, and suppose the thing had been desecrated as it is, was now. You know, what recourses would he have gone to, do you think? I mean, how would he have reacted in a private conversation with you, do you believe?
Bram Fischer was at heart an Afrikaner.
Bram Fischer was at heart an Afrikaner, yes.
He actually suffered, his family suffered, as a result of the imperialism of the British Empire.
Yes.
His grandfather was the advisor of the President of the Orange Free State.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His father defended the Boer dissidents in the 1914 war when they did not want South Africa to enter the war at the behest of the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
His father, who defended the Boers, threatened to burn his robes because the Ruinek judge that came from Natal mm-hmm. sent Boers to prison for the stand that they took against the war.
Mm-hmm.
He never forgot that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He wanted freedom for everyone in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He would be very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he took me
yes.
to the statue to show me mm-hmm. that freedom will soon mm-hmm. come to Africa as the sun will rise.
Mm-hmm.
Tells a story, and he actually would finish off his speech to the judge when he was sentenced to life imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
He finished up with Kruger's quote about freedom coming as sure as the sun will rise.
So you are saying that Bram Fischer himself used that quote in his closing arguments?
Yes.
That is extraordinary.
Well, you can interpret it for yourself
of course.
He should choose Kruger's enthusiasm
yes.
for freedom. Yes. It may well be that it meant the freedom of only the Boer Republic.
Of course.
But this did not influence Braun Fischer from actually incorporating this to the Afrikaner background, Afrikaner birth of the judge.
So what you are actually saying is that Braun Fischer not only would have allowed the statute of Kruger to stay, but he would have embraced it. He would have saluted it. He would have embraced what Kruger stood for against colonialism. But again, what you're saying to me is, in his heart, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Braun Fischer would have embraced South Africa's constitution. Is that correct, George?
No, he actually didn't live to see the constitution.
Of course. No, but what I'm saying is, in his mind,
he was a Democrat at heart.
That's what I'm saying.
And one of the exhibits in his trial was the constitution of the Communist Party of South Africa.
Yes.
It's not a Stalinist document.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a democratic
That's interesting.
A democratic statement that he wanted liberty for all the people, or freedom for all the people in South Africa. And of course, you know, for us, and particularly people like Arthur Chaskalson, who became the Chief Justice, they absolutely worshipped him for his commitment for freedom for all people in South Africa.
I trust that answers your question, Deidre.
Yes, thanks a million.
It's just great having you on our show. Brad has a lovely little thought, George. He says, I stand corrected, but as far as I know, Paul Kruger didn't want a statue put up, but when he was told that they would put one up, he wanted the top of his hat left open so the birds could nest in it to show his modesty.
Well, I'll take his word for it. I haven't heard it before, but it doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Now, George, of course, in this program, Looking Up with David Block, our heart goes very much out to our leaders of tomorrow. Our heart goes out to our youth of tomorrow. Our heart goes out to those who are perhaps living in shacks but striving to be the pioneers in astronomy or, cosmology or whatever their calling might be. Now, George, I remember once having a cup of tea with you at your home, and you quietly, tears just welled up in your eyes when you spoke about a certain teacher called Cecilia Feinstein, as I recall, and she somehow left an indelible impression upon your mind. Can you just, I remember you even telling me that she was at one of the honorary graduations, honorary degrees conferred upon you. Tell us just a little bit about Cecilia Feinstein and what teachers can mean to you as an individual.
I came in 1941 as a refugee from German-occupied Greece.
Yes.
My father became a laborer at ISCO.
At ISCO, yes.
Tried to get me into Pretoria Boys, but they would not have me because I didn't have any English or Afrikaans, of course. Mm-hmm. And tried to get me into YMCA, but I was too young. You had to be a young man and not a 14-year-old. So I worked in a shop as an assistant.
Yes.
My picture with my father when we arrived was in the Sunday Times.
I remember you showed me that.
Yes. And with the heading, Greek Farmer's Odyssey. And it was really my father's risking his life, possibly mine, by giving shelter to seven New Zealand soldiers that had been trapped by the German occupation of Greece. And when she looked at me, she said, are you the boy whose picture was in the paper?
Yes.
And I said, yes.
Yes.
What school do you go to?
Yes.
I don't go to school.
Hmm.
What?
Hmm.
She said, I'm going to the boss. I am going to report you to the inspector.
That's extraordinary.
And on Monday morning, I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to fetch him, make sure that he wears his best, that you buy him a uniform later.
Isn't that incredible, Duncan?
And I had already passed Standard 6 in Greece, but she was a Standard 6 teacher. She took me, looked after me, passed Standard 6 and the 7. She engaged to be married and said, this is a junior high school. You must go to the high school. I think that you are university material.
Mm.
I will send you to the high school. And she sent me to the Athlone High. Mm. There was another wonderful teacher, the sister of a great judge of the Court of Appeal, and Frieda Greenberg. And she took over.
So in other words, this lady really lit your candle.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, as in the scriptures, Psalm 18, the Lord has lit my candle. There have been people, George, who've come across my life, including you, sir, who have ignited my soul. I just enjoy having tea with you. You are just a man of genius and yet a man of such humility. And so this is obviously what Cecilia did for you, is she truly took you, lit your candle, she started you on your career, and here you sit today at the age of 86 and couldn't be busier.
87.
I was at your birthday party, exactly. So we have a few more callers and then we'll be wrapping up. I see that we have Neville again on the line. Welcome back, Neville. Neville has disappeared. All right. So here we go. Temba says, great to hear Advocate George Bizos. I recently finished listening to an audiobook of Long Walk to Freedom, and George Bizos is mentioned in that book a lot. Well, that is quite correct. He is mentioned a lot because Mandela, the late Mr. Mandela and George Bizos were just, you know, more than intimate friends. The question Temba has is his book going to be converted to audio book as well? In other words, are there any plans to take Odyssey to Freedom and to put it, you know, on into the audio space so that one can listen to it on a computer via headphones?
It's there already.
It's there already, George. So, in other words, if one perhaps goes to Kindle, is it on Kindle?
Do you know? Kindle.
It's on Kindle. Well, there you have it, Temba. It's on Kindle. You're listening to Professor David Block. Dial in the next 5 minutes, 0861-555-189. I have one of the world's greatest icons in studio, Advocate George Bizos. Reach us on Twitter, CliffCentral.com, on WeChat ID, Cliff Central. My Twitter feed and handle is at Starry Galaxy Man. I just want to conclude, George, if I may, is that you, of course, shared many, many intimate moments and many, many intimate memories with the late Mr. Mandela. And yet there's a great degree of pessimism on many fronts, that the rainbow seems to be dissipating. And we've discussed this already earlier on. But what always struck me, I mean, just in my limited exposure with Mr. Mandela, was his humility. What was it that struck you about him? What, you knew him and walked with him for so many years. What parts of the puzzle really always stuck with you even until today, George?
His optimism.
That's incredible. His optimism.
When I first went to visit him in August 1994,
Not 1964.
Yeah, I went to with a ferry
to Robben Island.
To Robben Island. I had to wait for him, and the bucky with no less than 8 warders, 2 in front, 2 at the back, 2 on the left, 2 on the right, and he, in short trousers, thick boots, no socks. And unlike most prisoners. He didn't put his head down. He was setting the pace with the warders following him. He came up to the consultant rooms. I embraced him. He embraced me. He asked me how he was winning. How are the children? And he gave Mr. Fisher's underground name was Shorty, because he was a short man. And when they spoke on the phone and others, they made the gesture. And he went. I said, you know, Bram Fisher was still free. And that pleased him. And then he turned around and said, you know, George, I haven't been here very long, but I've already lost my manners. I have not introduced you to my guard of honor. And he proceeded introducing each one by first name and surname. They were very embarrassed, of course, and they touched my hand, thinking that I may have some disease embracing black people. But, you know, this was his optimism. And what happened in Robben Island is that the majority of the lower rank warders actually became his friends. He would give them advice. He was a good lawyer. He would give them advice. They would do this, that, and the other. He was a very special man. And I don't know whether we're expecting too much if we think that we can get another like him.
In conclusion, I'd like to thank Advocate George Bizos so much for being my guest today. Here you are, perhaps on a concrete floor. Here you are, perhaps in prison. I don't know your circumstance, but what Advocate George Bizos has said today is be optimistic. Be optimistic. Live the future. My motto is look up, look up, look up. Never, never, never give up. To all our jewels, our precious listeners on CliffCentral.com, this is Professor David Block signing out. George, an honor to have you. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, David.
CliffCentral.com.